Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, March 16th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, Heidi Hamilton and Laura Minnie will be here with information about a film series at the Pioneer Home. We'll talk with Sarah Lewis and Darren Snyder about April Fowls and Foods Weekend. Artist Inari Kailanen will give us a preview of her upcoming class on color theory. And we'll talk with Shelley Wright about this week's Southeast Conference Mid-Session Summit. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on the Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A young Aboriginal woman in Canada wants to have her child's native name registered, but has encountered resistance from officials. Dan Karpinchuk has more.
Shanae Kathleen Volpe and her partner lived in Alberta, but decided before the birth of their baby last year to return to their home in Yellowknife so their child would have a birth certificate from the Northwest Territories. Kathleen Volpe says she wanted to give her little girl a traditional Chippewyan name. She chose one that means "when the sun peeks through," but spelling it properly requires a character that doesn't exist in the Roman alphabet, and officials told her she couldn't register her baby under that name. Kathleen Volpe is fighting that resistance, saying it's important because she's trying to keep her Aboriginal language alive, and it's an issue worth fighting for.
Oh, you can stand up and raise to see what will happen. You know you have the right, you're Aboriginal, you're strong, you're young. If you're old, you're young at heart, you can do it.
Officials say letters and symbols used on a birth certificate have to be recognized by the federal government for a passport to be issued. Using letters or symbols that are not recognized on a birth certificate would create difficulties with obtaining identification documents later in life. A spokesman says he's working with Ottawa to see if it's possible to allow such characters. Meanwhile, Kathleen Volpe has hired a lawyer to argue her case. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A Rosebud Sioux tribal member was killed by a pack of dogs Saturday on the reservation in South Dakota. A witness says Julia Charging Whirlwind had left a relative's house and was walking home when about 100 yards away, she was attacked. Derek Claremont, a firefighter and EMT, was one of the first persons at the scene.
The ambulance and the sheriff were right behind me, and there was two guys fighting these dogs off of her while she was laying there unconscious. As I got out of my vehicle, these dogs had come towards me. I decided to run around and protect Julie. Then the sheriff had gotten out of the car and shot the dog that was coming pretty close to us.
The tribal council is meeting today to outline steps for avoiding any similar incidents. Of the five Alaska Native mushers driving dog teams in this year's Iditarod Trail sled dog race, four are running among the top 30. Pete Kaiser of Bethel says he's still hoping for a top 10 finish in the race.
But yeah, we've just kind of been winging it as we go, and it's been slow and cold, and just a lot of hurdles. It could be worse, I guess.
The Iditarod started in Fairbanks a week ago with 78 dog teams. Dog teams traveled hundreds of miles down the frozen Yukon River and through frigid boreal forest, where temperatures dropped as cold as 50 degrees below zero. John Baker of Kotzebue won the race in 2011. He says his dogs don't have the kind of chemistry he was hoping for. He had expected to be running his teams at the front of the pack.
I did, but I'm definitely, the dogs aren't moving as quick as they should be, but maybe that'll change, I'm hopeful.
Teams are now making their way up the Bering Sea coast in their final push for the finish line in Nome. The Navajo Nation Council Friday approved legislation to fund the delayed presidential election, but to first hold a public referendum to allow the Navajo people to determine language fluency qualifications for president and vice president. More than $300,000 was requested for the special presidential election to be held in April. The election was put on hold in November after a candidate's Navajo language fluency was challenged. The issue has been playing out in tribal court and government. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes to Albuquerque the Tribal Telecom May 4th, weaving pathways across the digital divide. Information on services and Tribal Telecom 2015 at ahcnm.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, March 16th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 6 minutes after the hour. And joining us now from the Pioneer Home are Laura Minney. She's the Director of Social Services. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you.
And also Heidi Hamilton, the Director of Nursing and Nurse Practitioner. Welcome, Heidi.
Thank you.
Yeah. Nice to have you both here. Let's talk about the Pioneer Home. It's a very, very cool place.
It is a very cool place. So I'll just give you a little bit of information about the background of the Pioneer Home and help people understand. We have 48 residents, and we're all on one floor, and there's four neighborhoods within the Pioneer Home. And we focus in on resident-centered care, which is very, very important. So we really consider the needs of the residents as being primary and of great importance. And that can show up by, like during an admission, some of the questions that I might ask are what do you like to eat for breakfast? How do you like your coffee? Those kind of little tiny particular things really make a difference in a person's life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you wake up in the morning? How do you start your day? Those are really important to you. Well, they're also important to somebody that's coming into the Pioneer Home and making that big shift in their life. So within that, we have someone that can sign up for the Pioneer Home. They sign up at age 65, and that's a really important thing to do because whether they need it or not, it's there for them.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're ready to, if and when they ever need it, say age 85 or whatever that age may be, that will be there for them because the date actually stays with them. So if you sign up in 2015 and you're ready to activate 10 years later or 15 years later, that same date stays with you.
Okay.
And so I know that there's a lot of misconceptions out there about the Pioneer Home and the wait list, but really, as long as somebody does that, the likelihood of them getting into the Pioneer Home is much greater.
Is there a requirement for years lived in Alaska?
There is, yes, 1 year.
Oh.
Yep, so 1 year residency. And the application itself is really simple. It's just like the permanent fund. You know, you would have two witnesses, you have your photo ID. It's very, very simple. And then to activate, so somebody needs to come into the Pioneer Home, they have to be ready to be moved in within 30 days.
Okay.
So it's a really friendly environment. It's a very loving, kind environment. We encourage people in the community to come to the Pioneer Home. And, you know, Heidi will talk about the movies that we're going to be showing. But that's just an extension of one extension of what we try to do in bringing people in.
Okay. Yeah, Heidi, what keeps you busy over there?
A lot of things. As people age, sometimes their health care needs and their needs for assistance with their regular day kind of increase, and so we're there to support that, whatever it looks like. I'm able to review people's medications, make some suggestions and changes just to improve the quality of their life. Certainly, all of the staff there and the aides that work there help with all of their kind of assistance for their ADLs. So whatever somebody needs, and sort of like what Laura talked about, we try really hard to build relationships with people, get to know people. So whatever you want for your life, that's what we try to provide. But we have found a lot of people, when they move in, they haven't been around for a while unless they've known someone there, or they're really afraid, you know, this is the big scary place, you know, big nasty nursing home kinds of things. You know, nobody wants to go there. Everybody wants to stay in their own homes. And so we're kind of hoping by offering movies it'll open the doors a little more. Anything we can do to get people more comfortable with being in the Pioneer's homes.
Yeah, and so this next movie is The Age of Love.
Yeah. Right? There's a lot of issues that people face at every stage in their life, but the ones that come up when you get older don't get talked about as much. And it's happening a little bit more, so we've sort of tried to jump on this. One of the things, when you get older, your spouse will die sometimes, and you get lonely. And so how do you meet new people? And back east, they had a speed dating event for people who were over the age of 70, I think is what it was. And so this is a movie that's a documentary that shows the people that attended that event.
Yeah. If listeners, if you want, there's a trailer on YouTube. Just look up Age of Love. It looks like a really fun documentary.
Yeah, it's... there's parts that are kind of, they do a good job of capturing how scary it can be to go on a date, especially if you haven't done that for 40 years. and, you know, you don't know how you're going to be perceived at something like a speed dating. I think that's a scary event for a lot of people. And for someone who's in their older years to jump on the bandwagon and go do this was pretty cool to watch.
So that will be this Wednesday at 6 p.m.?
Correct. No, this Wednesday at 1.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And then next month in April, we're going to do another one. We're going to have a movie that's a documentary called Homes on the Range. And in Sheridan, Wyoming, it's a group got together, raised all the financing for, and built a group of homes that they call greenhouses, which is kind of a new trend. It's been going on for 5 or 10 years. To build smaller nursing homes that are someone's home. So this is a story of how they managed to do that.
Okay, so that will be April 15th. Will that also be at 1 p.m.?
Currently it's scheduled for 6 p.m.
Okay.
We found that it was a little harder for some people to attend the last showing that we did when it was in the evening. So we're kind of trying it out at 1 p.m. this time and see how that works.
Okay. And all of this is sort of an effort to for more community engagement. Is that right?
Yeah. So there's sort of two objectives. One, we would love to have more people come into the home, be involved in the home, and be comfortable there. So it's no longer that scary thing of, oh, my gosh, you know, I'm 80 years old and I really need someplace else to live, but I don't want to go there. So they'll be comfortable with that. The other thing is really getting the education out about the issues that face older adults. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. And speaking from experience, I had a chance to play music there once. It's a really nice space.
Yeah.
You know, lots of natural light, yeah. Well designed. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone probably knows where you are, but it's right there by Twin Lakes, mm-hmm. right there.
Old Glacier Highway.
Yeah. We have a path out our back door, basically, that goes to the Twin Lakes walking path. So. Mm-hmm. Easy to get out.
Yeah, and so what are other ways that people can engage with the Pioneer Home? I know musicians go there sometimes. What else, Laura?
Some volunteers come in regularly, actually, to do art projects, and that's actually expanding even more so. It would be wonderful for volunteers to come in and just walk with the residents, sit with the residents. So there's lots of different things if you have a certain talent that you want to share. That's we welcome that as well.
Great. And would you be a good contact, Laura?
Actually, our director of activities is Judy Neary. So,
okay.
And she, you can call the general phone number and 780-6422, and then Judy's extension will come up with that and be directly connected to her. But it is really, really a good place. We also have Ice Cream Social on Friday.
Oh, yeah.
And that's always a big event. I mean, last Friday, it was hopping. And so a lot of people in the community come during that time, or, you know, residents or potential residents can come, or family members or community people always come. And so there's lots of different types of ice cream, and Tom Loker comes and plays the piano, and it's always I mean, it's wonderful. It really is truly wonderful. And then when you talk about musicians, you know, the big band comes to play, and
we do a senior prom every spring, big Christmas and Thanksgiving meals. But the very best thing is the people that live there.
Yeah.
And so if you just want to come and visit, if you want to come and hear stories about Juneau and what it was like to come up here back in the steamboat days or work in the mines, this is the place to come.
Yeah. Real relationships and people. It's pretty an amazing place to be.
And you can start this Wednesday at 1 p.m., right?
Yep.
With the Age of Love.
That's right.
At the Pioneer Home. Give us the best way to contact you once more.
Okay, the phone number is 780-6422.
Okay, Laura Minnie, Heidi Hamilton, thanks for coming in today. Are we missing anything?
Nope, I think we got it.
Great, thanks you too.
Thank you.
I sit alone at my table and watch all the others have fun. Watching the mainland run. I'm tired of having no future and living on things that I've done. I'm tired of sitting on the sidetrack, just watching the mainland run. Train, train, oh, let me ride, don't leave me. Call me the hun. I'm tired of sitting on the sidetrack, just watching the mainland run. I'm tired of having no future and living on things that I've done. I'm tired of sitting on the sidetrack, just watching the mainland run.
Membership drive is coming soon. That also means that it's time for the used record, CD, and video sale. If you've got used media you'd like to pass on, bring it down to KTOO the week of March 16th for our semi-annual sale, scheduled for Saturday, March 21st at 9 a.m. For more information, please call Jeff Brown at 463-6425 or email jeff at ktoo.org. Thank you.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, March 16th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 20 minutes past the hour, and now in the studio is Sarah Lewis. Welcome, Sarah.
Thanks.
And Darren Snyder, both agents of the UAF Cooperative Extension Service. I love that you're agents.
Yes.
Yeah, we love it, too. It's kind of fun. Kind of fun.
So why don't you give us an update on what's going on with the service?
All right. Well, at any one time during the year, both Sarah and I will be offering different things to the community. We're definitely a 24/7 resource for everybody to come online and to see our plethora publications which run the gamut on a lot of different food issues, whether you are trying to grow your own food or preserve your own food or go out and harvest it in the wilds. We have youth programs through 4-H, which I administer throughout Southeast Alaska, and we do a lot of different programming, and we try and do these special events, some of them coming up here each year. And we are, you know, our reason to be is to bring the university to the people. That's our slogan. That's what we're working with. And so we're always trying to find out from you, the listener, and you, the participant, in your land grant university here. We want to find out what you're interested in. And so please let Sarah and I and our wonderful administrative assistant, Susie, know if there are specific types of programs that you're looking for, and just give us that feedback. That's kind of our job.
Yeah, what keeps you busy, Sarah?
Oh, what keeps me busy? Well, right now what's keeping me busy is planning for the April Fowls and Foods Weekend, which is, if you remember from last year and for the past 4 years, I think, there's been the April Fowls Day Chicken Summit. I think 1 year it was the Cluco de Mayo,
yeah,
a little bit later.
One.
But Darren started a great thing that was focused on the big interest in chickens here in Juneau. This year we've decided to expand it. And because a lot of extension offices, what they'll do is they'll have an extension week or an extension weekend. And so we're building on the success of the April Fowls Day, and we're expanding it to April Fowls and Foods. So Darren's going to be moving into things like goats as well. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a goat track, and I'm going to be teaching food preservation and preparation classes. There will be classes for kids, especially on the Saturday. And so that's going to be April 25th and 26th. It'll be at DZ. We're going to be basically taking over the school there for much of the weekend and doing a lot of different workshops so people can get a better idea of the things that we offer. But most of these are actually things that people have told us they want to learn.
Will you have actual chickens and goats at DZ?
that's to be determined.
We're hoping so. We're hopeful. Yeah.
We will have actual goat and chicken interactions available throughout the weekend. And one of the favorite things to do, of course, is our tour de coop. And so we line up different coop owners, and people open their doors, open their coops, and show people just how you can raise chickens successfully here in Southeast. Even last year we had a couple goats on the tour just inadvertently. They happened to be at one of the houses that we visited. And so between those tours, and then also we do have a hands-on processing experience available for folks who are interested. And, you know, if you're raising chickens, sometimes you end up with a rooster, and roosters can be a problem for your neighbors. And so if the time comes that you need to have that guy go into the soup pot, then it's good to know how to do that. And so we also offer that over this weekend that's coming up here. Again, at the end of April, we'll be having our event, and having a demonstration on that is being offered.
How would you say the growth of home gardening and raising chickens? It seems like it's really trending here in Juneau. What do you think?
All over. It's mm-hmm. trending all over. The general focus on local foods and being self-sufficient and knowing the resources within your local area, whether they're chickens or your own home, what you can grow at your own home or what you can actually harvest from. I mean, around here in Juneau, we're actually going to have someone speak about foraging for spring greens in the forest. We're going to have a class on that. There's just the self-sufficiency and the feeling that gives you, that you have the skills to be resilient. Some people, it's for a big emergency they think they might be planning for. Other people, it's just because it's a really, really good way to interact with our local environment and the resources we have.
And so fulfilling, mm-hmm. right? It just feels good, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there are many people who are focused on just the sense of place and just – really feeling like we're making the most of being in this beautiful and abundant land. And so that we're just trying to open the doors to that opportunity. Again, we have this event, April Fowls and Foods Day event, coming out at the end of April. But another event, which we're offering specifically for youth again this year, is our Alaska Experience Camp, or AK Experience Camp. And this is for kids who are middle school and high school. And it's right at the beginning of summer this year. We'd offered it at the end of summer in the previous years. But the week of June 8th, we're going to offer this camp. And so if your kid is interested in learning about the harvest, the bountiful harvests available, including just adventuring, what does it take to put together a kayak trip? What does it take to have the ability to keep yourself safe in the outdoors? We work on firearm safety. We work on shelter building. How to succeed in Alaska, in the wilds of Alaska, is our focus with that camp. So if you're interested in that camp for your kids, or you're interested in the April Fowls and Foods weekend, you're welcome to call our office and pre-register for either.
Yeah, and we highly recommend that. We've actually got folks already pre-registered for the Alaska Experience Camp before the flyers even came out, people called. So that's one you definitely want to pre-register for. And with the number of different workshops that we've got going on at the April Fowls and Foods weekend, that'd be a really good one to pre-register for as well. And then eventually the actual registration will open up. But until then, 523-3280.
Okay, lots of good stuff going on there, and information about community gardening, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
You can find more, can't you? Mm-hmm. All right, well, Sarah Lewis, Darren Snyder, thanks for coming on the show. Anything else you'd like to add?
We're on Facebook.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Like us on Facebook.
And also our website. But the best thing is to go ahead and call 523-3280 and talk with Susie to get pre-registered. And, yeah.
Yeah,
and do
ask to get on our listserv. We do a good old-fashioned email listserv where we can blast out information, or Facebook if you're into that, and we do try and let people know what we're doing. And we're always doing something or other, and it's good. I always get the question, do you have another one of these classes coming up, or that class? And so we'll put together interest lists and keep you on that list and let you know when it's happening.
Great. Sarah and Darren, thank you so much.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks.
Is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 16th of March, 2015. The birthday of James Madison, near Port Conway, Virginia, 1751. Went off to Princeton, graduated as the colonies were on the brink of revolution. At the age of 29, he became the youngest member of the Continental Congress. James Madison, 5'6", weighed barely 100 pounds, a quiet man, but he worked very hard, and he was very well prepared for every session of Congress. He believed in a strong central government, one of the main drafters of the Constitution. He was elected to the new House of Representatives in the first U.S. Congress when he introduced the Bill of Rights. Lived to the age of 85, died one morning, eating breakfast in bed. He wrote to Thomas Jefferson, "We are in a wilderness without a single footstep to guide us. Our successors will have an easier task, and by degrees the way will become smooth, short, and certain." 1850, on this day, Nathaniel Hawthorne's novel The Scarlet Letter was published. When he finished writing The Scarlet Letter, story of Hester Prynne, who has a child out of wedlock, forced by the Puritans to wear a large scarlet letter A for adultery on her chest, he read it aloud to his wife, Sophia, who went to bed with a terrible headache, and he took that as a sign that he had written a pretty good novel. And it's the birthday of Alice Hoffman, New York City, 1952. Went on to graduate school to study writing. She thought that the magical stories that she had loved as a kid didn't fit into adult writing, and then she read Gabriel Garcia Marquez's 100 Years of Solitude, and it changed her life. Here's a poem for today by Michael Blumenthal, Days We Would Rather Know. There are days we would rather know than these, as there is always later, a wife we would rather have married than whom we did. In that severe nowness, time pushed imperfectly to then. Whether standing in the museum before Rembrandt's Juno, we stand before beauty or only before a consensus about beauty, is a question that makes all beauty suspect and all marriages. Last night, leaves circled the base of the ginkgo as if the sun had shattered during the night into a million gold coins no one had the sense to claim. And now there are days we would rather know than these, days when to stand before beauty and before Juno are convincingly the same, days when the shattered sunlight seeps through the trees and the women we marry stay interesting and beautiful both at once, and their men. And though there are days we would rather know than now, I am, at heart, a scared and simple man. So I tighten my arms around the woman I love, now and imperfectly, stand before Juno, whispering, beautiful, beautiful, until I believe it. And when I come home at night, I run out into the day's pale dusk with my broom and my dustpan, sweeping the coins from the base of the ginkgo, something to keep for a better tomorrow, days we would rather know that never come. A poem by Michael Blumenthal, Days We Would Rather Know, from his collection, Days We Would Rather Know, published by Pleasure Boat Studio Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. And by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 16th, 2015. It's about 30 minutes till the top of the hour, and joining me now in the studio is Inari Kailanen. Welcome, Inari.
Thank you, thank you.
She's an acrylic painter, among other things. And Inari, will you tell us how to pronounce your name, actually?
It's Inari Kailanen.
All right.
I know, it's super hard. It's not a name that is very easy to pronounce in English.
So you're going to be giving a class at the Canvas on color theory. Very interesting. Let's talk about that in a minute. But before that, I would like to learn more about you.
Okay.
Yeah. Where are you from? What kind of art you do? And how long you been in Juno and all that kind of stuff?
Well, I was born and raised in Finland. So I grew up in a capital in Helsinki. And then I moved around. So I lived in close to Arctic Circle for a few years in Rovaniemi. Which is it's kind of like some parts of Alaska, but still having a European feel. So
okay.
I moved to Fairbanks, so I actually moved south when I moved to Fairbanks, which is...
You don't hear that very often.
No, usually people move up north, but I went southwards when I get to, of course, the other side of the globe.
And now you're way down south.
I know. This feels so south that this is 48 degrees latitude, and I grew up in 60s, like, oh.
And it's, 43 degrees today and
I
sunny.
I know, it's weird.
So, yeah, tell us about what kind of art you make.
I paint and I draw, and I'm also an art educator, so I used to teach at the Canvas, at the Reach site there, and I have had a few classes at the university, but mainly I'm a professional artist right now.
Okay. And you do a lot of portraiture, is that right?
Well, they're kind of, they're portraits, but I corner people up. So I might take somebody's nose and somebody else's eyes, or it's not really that I put somebody in front of me and paint them, that it's mostly that I take features that I enjoy and then just put them together in these creations.
And sort of narrative paintings as well, you said?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are always kind of the midpoint of a story. So I don't tell you the beginning. I don't tell you the end. I tell you what's happening right now. And then you have to figure out, where did the story come from? How is it going to end?
Okay. And you're going to be teaching this next class on color theory. And I love it in the description. It talks about, you know, contrary to popular belief, all color is not a mixture of the three distinct primary colors. And then it goes on, and you can selecting good color combinations and avoiding common color mistakes. Yeah, so yeah. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, I've struggled color through myself. So, and I feel like for everybody, it's that you try to mix color and you put these together and you think you're going to get this color and boom, you have something else. And then you start mixing something else too. Like, oh no, this is too yellow. No, I had to put more. And then in the end, you have this giant mess and you wasted half of your paints by trying to get something. So I'm going to teach people how to mix color properly. What is color? Where does it come from? How you're going to get that exact color you want? And it is fairly tricky to do that.
You were saying that you struggled with it in your past. How did you learn about color theory?
By reading a lot and sort of, I was shown when I went to Fairbanks, I was doing a master's degree in painting, and I paid my way being a teaching assistant, but in RIT, usually you are the teacher, so you're not assisting somebody else. They just kind of like, all right, here's a class for you. And they gave me color and design class. I was like, I have no idea. I was basically one class ahead of my students trying to learn myself what I'm doing here and giving lectures and always hoping, like, please don't ask me this question. I have no idea. So in the end, it all worked good. And I taught it for many years, but the first time was really a struggle.
And you were saying, you know, contrary to popular belief, it's not a mixture of the three distinct primary colors. Can you give us just a little, I don't know, synopsis of some of the things you'll be teaching about?
Well, primary colors don't exist. That we are taught that they exist, and you have the red and green, red, yellow, and blue, and you can get it, whatever color you want out of those, but you can't. So if you ever had the experience that you mix red and blue, and you're thinking, all right, violet, and you get this brown. I'm like, hey, what? I want violet. And then you try it again, and you get some sort of violet, but it's not this brilliant, beautiful. So in reality, primary colors don't exist. There are colors that are harder to mix, but you can mix red. You just need a certain type of magenta and yellow, and you can make red out of that. So it's a sort of a big, well, I don't want to say hoax, but it's wrong information that's been passed on generation after generation after generation because artists are lazy and don't want to listen to the scientists that are actually knowing what happens.
Okay. Who would benefit from taking this class?
Pretty much anybody that has any art interest. So if you struggle with your colors, if you are a painter, if you're a hobby paintist, if you are doing quilts and you just not really know how to get your nice color combination. So pretty much anybody that wants to have a solid foundation of how to deal with color. It's a painting class, but I don't expect people to be painters. So it's a lot of color mixing, figuring out what comes when you mix these two together. But the theory is the same no matter what you're mixing. So if you're mixing pieces of, you take fabric strips and put those together, or if you're doing pottery and putting glazes together. So the theory behind it is all the same, but the materials that you're working with would be different.
So an interior designer would benefit? Just somebody who wants to dress properly, maybe?
Good. That might be a little bit of stretch.
I like how you said quilters, though, too, and painters. So, yeah.
Yeah, so any sort of self-expression that you want to use color and you're just wondering, why isn't this working? So it's really geared towards solving and understanding what is color, why some color combinations work, why some don't. Okay. How do you make those that actually work? How do you mix your colors that are great color combinations?
And it looks like it's a 4-week class on Tuesdays, beginning tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
March 17th, 6:30 to 9. I suspect people could just go to canvasarts.org
mm-hmm.
for more information or to sign up.
Yeah, you can call Canvas. I don't have their phone number, but you can call them and or just drop by. And I think they're still taking until the start of the class. So you could just show up and say, hey, I want to take this and be there.
And it looks like $185 for the 4 weeks?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
And all the supplies are covered in that.
Well, it sounds like a very interesting class, Inari. Thank you for coming by. It was nice talking to you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Anything else you want to add?
No, I'm super excited to teach this class, so I hope that there will be a lot of people that are as geeky and excited than I am.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Today as I was walking in the fields just down the way, the whiteness in a floating cloud, the sky of baby blue, a yellow dandelion, pretty evergreen, and some red and orange flowers growing wild along the stream. As I looked around me, more than I did look the more, I realized that I was viewing God's coloring. Baby's teeth, the blackness in a stormy sky, the brown and fallen leaves, the purple haze at sunset just before the night, and the multicolored rainbow stretched out across the sky.
Juno Symphony invites you to join our final conductor candidate, Jeremy Briggs Roberts, for a sonic portrait of works by Russian composers, including Tchaikovsky's monumental Fourth Symphony and Prokofiev's virtuosic Piano Concerto No. 3, March 28th and 29th at JDHS. Tickets available at the Jack, Hearthside Books, and at the door. Sponsored by Alaska Airlines, Hecla Greens Creek Mining Company, and KRNN Public Radio. For more information, visit junosymphony.org. We'll see you at the symphony.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 16th, 2015. It's about 15 minutes until the top of the hour. I've been joined in the studio by Shelley Wright. She's the executive director of the Southeast Conference. Welcome, Shelley.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming out of this beautiful afternoon into the studio.
It's a beautiful day, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So why don't you start by telling us a little bit about the Southeast Conference?
Okay. Southeast Conference was actually formulated in 1958. We've been around for a long time. Originally, the plight of those people was to adopt design and create a transportation system. And so the folks of Southeast Conference were integral in creating the Alaska Marine Highway System. Supported that for several years and then grew into all things economic development. Currently, Southeast Conference is the economic development district for the federal government, and we are the regional development district for the state. With that comes a obligation to develop an economic plan for the region, and we're starting our new process to develop that economic plan. We really try to collaborate with all different entities, municipalities, nonprofits, all organizations in Southeast Alaska to create a synergy around economic development and work together, hopefully getting our isolated communities more connected and working together.
Interesting. How many members do you have a board, all that?
We have 13-member board of directors. We have 181 members, but that's a bit deceiving because most of our members are large organizations, municipalities, tribal governments, corporations. So when it gets right down to it, we have about 1,100, 1,200 folks that are in our tent, if you will. And our meeting tomorrow is more or less a family reunion. We have a core group of members that communicate frequently, and our annual meeting in September and our mid-session summit in March are the two meetings that we have face-to-face. As people in Southeast know, rarely do you get to see your friends very often. You talk to them on the phone a lot, and that's what a lot of our work is done by phone or cyberspace, but our two meetings, we get to see face-to-face and meet each other and catch up and have some good times.
Yeah, who will be some of your guests tomorrow?
Well, we do have several folks from Prince Rupert that will be here, which is kind of exciting. We have mayors from across the region, city planners, economic developers, private industry. We've got some mining industry coming in and some construction folks coming in, fishermen. All shapes and sizes.
And what does it look like? Do people give lectures? What's the structure like?
Well, this meeting is a working meeting. So the first day tomorrow, Tuesday, is a series of presentations, just more or less updates of what's going on in the region, different areas, different industry sectors will give updates of what's happening in their area, in the region. And then Wednesday is committee meetings. So each industry sector will meet. And this year we're going to really kick off our planning process for our next five-year economic development plan. And so within that committee structure, we'll be deciding who's going to be on that committee and who's going to be helping out with the coordinating of designing that strategic plan.
Okay. Who would benefit from attending the conference in the next couple days?
Well, I think anybody that wants to know about the economy of Southeast Alaska would benefit from coming. We don't really focus on one particular industry or one particular area. We're kind of like buckshot. We try to hit all of them at once. And since we only meet twice a year, it is a bit of a whirlwind. But anyone that's interested in what's happening in the economy of Southeast would benefit from coming to the meeting.
Okay. And then the plan that you're talking about, if somebody wants to participate in that or add ideas, how could they do that?
Well, if they're not able to come to the meeting tomorrow or Wednesday, Southeast Conference has a website, and they can get on the website and figure out who the contact person for their particular committee will be. They can call me. My number is on the website as well, www.seconference.org. And my email is there. They can send me an email. They can send me or call me on the phone. I will forward their information to the particular group or committee that they're interested in so they can be actually involved in the planning process and be a participant, an active participant, because that's really what we're looking for is active participation.
What do you foresee being a couple of the highlights of the plan?
Well, we're really trying to focus on small business development. We understand, and it's come painfully clear to us, that the wagon train is past us, and we have to start working for ourselves. It's going to be so important for our communities to be able to sustain themselves through private investment, private industry. So that's really an important piece of the plan. There's a couple of particular sectors that we're focusing on. The marine industry, all facets of the marine industry, from fishing to boat and ship repair. Also, food security is a big part of our work now. We have a gal that's been working throughout the region, and we've partnered with a couple of other organizations to really start developing some food sustainability within the regions.
Very cool. Very cool. Okay. So this meeting starts tomorrow. And if you want more information or you can't attend the meeting, what's your website again?
It's seconference.org.
Okay. Executive Director Shelley Wright of the Southeast Conference, thanks for coming on the show. Are we missing anything?
No, I think we're good. We'll see you all on Tuesday and Wednesday.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks.
This is Bird Note. Few backyard birds are as beloved as the black-capped chickadee. The boldly patterned chickadee is perky, trusting, and it even seems to introduce itself to us by calling out its name. In spring, black-capped chickadees also voice a sweet series of notes that sounds like, "Hey, sweetie." And from a chickadee's point of view, there's a huge difference between and. The springtime means something like, "Ladies, I'm a male chickadee looking for a mate. You other guys, get lost." Technically speaking, is a song, a seasonal vocalization specifically tied to mating and territory. When a chickadee voices its namesake, however, it's a sound categorized as a call. Calls, distinct from songs, are uttered by both sexes and may be voiced year-round. Chickadees call to one another as the pair moves about, as a way of remaining in contact. Black-capped chickadees also voice a host of variations that may scold a predator, give an all clear, announce a food source, and more. So, those perky, acrobatic chickadees, yes, okay, they're cute, but they're also clever. Hear them at birdnote.org.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon today. Tomorrow on a Juno Afternoon, I'll be your host, and we'll talk with Sasha Soboloff about gold medal basketball. Tim Ortiz will be here with details about his upcoming watercolor painting class at the Canvas. We'll talk to the Alaskan Brewing Company's Andy Klein about their new seasonal beer, and we'll learn about the charter school open house and application process for the next school year. Those interviews, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more live at 3 p.m. here on KTOO News and repeated at 4 on KRNN and online via ktoo.org. Have this announcement here that the Juneau Human Rights Commission meeting scheduled for Monday, March 16th, tonight at 5:30 has been canceled due to lack of a quorum. Currently 43 degrees in downtown Juneau, and tonight we'll see some increasing clouds, lows 25 to 33, light winds. Tuesday, mostly cloudy, highs around 43, light winds increasing, northeast wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. And on Wednesday, mostly cloudy, chance of rain, highs around 43. And Thursday through Friday, looking like mostly cloudy, chance of rain, highs around 45, lows around 36. Listening to a piece called Mella by Esperanza Spalding. Stay tuned for All Things Considered coming up next.